Hey, everybody, and welcome to Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody. I'm here with
Paul A. Presenza, known as the Moo Cow.
And James McAdoo.
And James is one of Paul's friends, and if you've been watching, following our videos, you'll be seeing that he's here with us doing a lot of the stuff inside the studio. So thank you, James, for coming out here. We always need, like, another person, we feel like, a lot of times. Because even though, you know, we can talk and jibber-jabber for a little bit, we like to have other people here, too. So.
Absolutely. Adds a bit more to the dynamic.
More meat for the gristles.
Oh, yes, yeah. Exactly. So, so since this is Paul's pick of the week, or of the, I guess the every other week, please tell us what are we and like we don't know. I don't know if you saw what we were watching or whatever.
I have the slightest idea. It's just as surprising to me.
I know. So we have no idea what's in store for us. So please enlighten us.
Okay, so we are going to be hopping into the Wayback Machine, going way back to 1985 to watch a movie called Hard Rock Zombies.
No, I have not seen this, but I've heard of it.
Oh, boy. So, yep. This should be very interesting.
So, yeah, it is one of those movies I've heard of, but I've never gotten the chance to see yet. So,
okay. So, I guess we'll just have to see what happens.
All right. Well, thank you. But before then, let's listen to some mood music. Back.
So, Hard Rock Zombies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Reactions.
You know, I didn't hate it.
Really? Because I do.
Oh, okay.
He hates it, yet he shows it to us.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Uh-huh. No. What? That makes no sense. That one didn't work.
Okay.
That was a fail, Paul. Anyway. No, I all I have to say is, what the fuck?
Yeah.
This was definitely, like, we do a thing on the videos for What the Fuck Fridays, and this is, like, a What the Fuck Friday kind of thing.
Right, right. Like, it's just, it's one I'd been thinking about. It's just that there ain't no way Jen was going to sit through this.
So you're thinking about it for last season, and then you chose to do it this season.
Yes, because I do have friends that I still like to torment with crappy films from time to time, and this is definitely one that I would have dusted off and shown, especially if they'd been, you know, like me, alive back in the stinky 80s when this movie is absolutely steeped in every bad 80s stereotype and trope there is.
There are like six montages or something.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It was so rough. So, okay, so here we go. Hard Rock Zombies, 1985. This was directed by somebody by the name of Krishna Shah. He wrote, directed, and produced it. Here's the story behind this. So he was making a movie, a teenage comedy movie in 85 called American Drive-In, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a crappy movie which missed the whole 70s drive-in thing. It was like a thing for drive-ins back then. And this was 10 years too late, and he was making this cheap, shitty movie. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, there has to be a movie playing in the background on the drive-in for this movie to be about a drive-in. So, of course, not wanting to actually spend the money on a real movie to be playing in the background, they made this, you know, bits and pieces of this zombie movie to be played in there. And then they got the brilliant idea, well, why don't we just make a second movie based on that? So that's where this came from. This is as an expansion of the bits and pieces that they put in American Drive-In and just decided to make a full-fledged movie on that. So you, and it feels like it because it's just scattered. It's just bits and pieces of shit thrown against the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah, that really makes sense.
it feels like that. Like, it feels like a movie that was kind of put together that didn't, like, it was like a bunch of different movies that they had, like, an idea for that they were like, well, that doesn't work for a full-length movie, you know, in itself. Let's go and make it into this like right. weird
Let's
fucking
Let's take
thing.
These ideas and characters and plots and throw it in a blender, press puree, and whatever the fuck comes out, we'll just dump it on the screen, and that's what they're going
to
get.
And somebody's going to pay to see it.
You know, if there's these teens, they like their rock music and their boobs, they'll go to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. So Chris DeShaw made this movie. He doesn't really do a whole lot. He was doing some stuff with theater. And then later on, he actually he started making movies kind of about India because that's where he's from. And he made an animated film called Prince of Light in 2000, which actually it was actually up for an Academy Award. Didn't win.
Right.
But now he's he's one of the bigwigs in the Directors Guild in Hollywood. So go figure.
Wait.
You can go from a shitty movie like this into being in the Directors Guild.
Yeah, but he's dead now, so.
Well.
You know,
yeah.
Sadly, he died in 2013, I believe, so. That's sad. I mean, but he made a lot of stuff, it seems.
There you go.
He made some stuff.
So he made this film with E.J. Kearse. Is the mullet wearing Jesse?
Oh.
His claim to fame is that he was in a bunch of hair bands back in the 80s, and he's a bass player. And I think the latest band he is in is a band called No Duh, which is a sort of tribute band to No Doubt, believe it or not.
What?
Yeah, it's called No Duh.
Okay.
But he was also, I think the biggest one he was in is in another hair metal band called Silent Rage. Which he's been in for quite some time. He was also in a couple of things. I think he was in Bones, the TV show. He popped in there, and he was a bit player in the movie Rules of Engagement. But I think his other claim to fame is that sometime in either the 80s or 90s, he actually posed naked in Playgirl.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like your hot 80s mullet-wearing hair metal spandex guys, this is him. He's like a John Michael Four, only, you know, with a smidge more talent.
Hey, girl. You got a name? You want to tell me what it is?
So there's that, and then there is Sam Mann. Sam Mann plays the drummer of the band. Sam Mann, to me, is famous because he's one of those guys who, in the 80s, was in a handful of really good classic stinky crap, most of which is Donald G. Jackson films. So one of my favorite movies of all time from that period was Rollerblade, which we definitely have to do at some point, and Sam Mann is in that. And he did that movie right after this one. And then he was in a couple other shitty 80s films. So for me, Sam Mann just, you know, he kind of represents that mid-80s straight-to-video cassette kind of crappy film that I just absolutely adored.
So who is he in that?
Sam Mann was the guy with the drum, played the drummer with the weird hard hat.
The one
that never drums. Yeah. He's just kind of mildly sort of poking the sticks around.
Okay.
He's really the only two from the band that I know. The girl, Cassie, the famously named Cassie, is named Jennifer Coe. Jennifer Coe played a teenage girl in Falcon Crest. And she plays the teenage, well, supposedly teenage, well, I'm not even sure, in this film.
We think she was 12.
And that's
yeah,
it.
She's just.
This is it. This is the only stuff I can see occur in. And then the only other person I know that has any kind of name to him is Phil Fondacaro, who's one of the small people who, because of course you can't have a rock and roll hairspray spandex band horror movie without a bunch of midgets around. But there's so much more to this.
We're going to get into that.
So, plot? How do we even begin this talk about the plot of this film?
There are like six of them.
I know. what I'll do is if it's on the IMDb, I will read what the IMDb says, because a lot of times what we do is we'll give you the whole... We'll tell you the whole story or whatever.
And you can't do it with this
film. You can't do that with this film because there's way too much
it's
that
too
happens.
It's too disjointed.
All right.
It makes no sense.
So this is literally somebody's idea of what the movie is about. a hard rock band travels to the tiny remote town of Grand
Guignon
to perform. Peopled by Hicks, Rubes, werewolves, murderous dwarfs, sex perverts, and Hitler. This town is a strange place that doesn't stop the band's lead singer from falling in love with a local girl named Cassie. after Nazi sex perverts kill the band to satisfy their lusts. Cassie calls the Rockers back from the grave to save her, the town, and maybe the world. I don't know about the world part, but that's why it says maybe, I'm sure.
Oh, my God. So that kind of scratches the surface of there. So, yeah, there's this shitty hair band. They're in the van. They're driving around. They go to Grand Guignol. And
they just happen to come across the secret to necromancy at some point.
Yes, yes.
Not explained.
So weird. There's just so many goofy things. You can't go into everything. It's impossible. But, so yeah, it's like a mashup of a rock and roll video from the 80s with a horror movie with Footloose, because there are a bunch of townies that don't want that rock and roll around, and just, you know, every other 80s trope you could possibly squeeze in there. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous and stupid as hell, but it's also kind of fun because it's so ridiculous.
It's so over the top.
It is way over the top. I mean, come on. There is a Nazi werewolf grandma with a pair of switchblades killing people.
Who has sex with Adolf Hitler?
Yes, as you do.
Yeah. Of course, because if she's gonna have sex with anybody, it's gonna be Adolf Hitler.
Right, right. So Adolf is just kind of hanging around, and he's got a mask of like an old man, and then he pulls the mask off, and he's like young Hitler underneath.
Well, that was baffling. Why did he put on an old man Hitler mask to take off the mask and still be Hitler?
Wouldn't it have been? I think it would have been funnier if he took off the mask and he was Jesus Christ
or something else.
like he went from Hitler to Jesus, and like, hey, you know, like I would have loved to see that.
Yeah, that would have been.
God, it was just so retarded.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this all these different weird subplots going on, but eventually they manage to lure the band over to this. Hitler's and the grandma's place.
Explain how they lure them over.
Oh, God. So the movie opens where interpretive dance girl, and that's what I'm going to call her because I don't know what the hell her name is, murdering an interpretive dance girl, finds these two guys. They drive. They see her there. They get all hot and bothered. They follow her into the water. She gets naked. They get naked, and then she kills each one of them because they're incredibly stupid. While midgets watch and frolic, as you do. And then she cuts the hands off one of them, and then the midget loves that because I guess he's got a hand collection. And
it is never really explained.
It's not explained.
But he does love it. It's apparently it's his toy.
Right, 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 right.
There's like a shelves full of them
too. So that's sort of like their thing. And there's a guy taking pictures the whole thing. So it's kind of like their thing. It's like a weird family, like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of thing. And so then the band is driving on the road, and that's when he's talking about his medieval resurrection music that he discovers. And, you know, it's weird. He's, like, playing this, and it's just the same couple of notes over and over and over. But, you know, the guy kills the mosquito, and then he's playing it, and then he has to kill the mosquito again, and he has to kill it because it keeps coming back to life.
I thought that was kind of clever. I kind of like that.
It's kind of clever. It's stupid, but
you
clever.
Don't really, like, the better thing is they do that gag again with the spider.
They do.
Killing a spider
over and over.
Yeah. And so, it definitely beats a dead horse. But
brings it back to life.
And then brings it back to life and then beats it again. But the funny thing about that is that I didn't really notice. I saw the mosquito, but I didn't pay attention because you never get to really see the mosquito get back alive and everything.
Right, right.
You just see it keep attacking. So I literally thought there was just more than one mosquito that just kept biting him.
That's kind of what I was gathering.
And then later you see the spider come back to life, and actually you can tell it's the spider's coming back to life and attacking again. And I was like, okay, they did that better that time. They shouldn't have done the mosquito.
Well, I think at one point the guy says, "Oh, the damn mosquito keeps biting." So I, you know, clearly, to me at the time, I don't know, maybe it's just because I've seen it so many times.
Right.
In any event, so they're in the band, they're in the van doing all this, and then they see the chick, the same chick that lured the other people, and so of course naturally they pull over and they start howling because that's what these guys do.
Right.
Because earlier they were playing in another town. They were doing their shitty hair band thing, and the manager wants them to get a bunch of pictures, and they're like, "No, man, it's just about the music." And he lets them in, and then a bunch of teenage girls run in there, and so they've got to sign their tits and sign their butts and sign their thighs and
Which I've never understood that. Like, I've never understood the whole signing of the tits thing.
I don't know.
Because it eventually washes off. Yeah. Like, what's the point? Get a piece of paper. Yeah. You know?
You know why? Because longer. Tits. Yeah. That's why.
Well, no, I mean, it's cool for the band members, but what's the point of the girls? Like, you know,
I don't know.
Do they get any enjoyment out of it?
It's a little short-sighted, yes.
Maybe it is enjoyment for the girls. Maybe they like it just them touching that. I don't know.
Which I forgot to mention was that all of the band members were ripped and were just wearing banana hammocks.
Yes, yes, good God. You get to see lots of that. So in the meantime, you know, Jesse's had enough of this, and he walks away. And all of a sudden, here comes Cassie, who's there to warn them not to go to Grand Guignol. And she looks like she's 12, or I thought maybe 14 originally. It turns out the actress is really like 19 or 20. But I'm telling you what, man, she looks like barely over 14 years old. Creepy as fuck, man.
And the way that like she behaves in the film and that she's treated by other characters in the film is that she's just a small child.
Oh, yeah. So naturally, he macks all over her in a super creepy guy. Got to take 37 showers. Like, he's in his, like, 30s. Yeah. With his horrible mullet, and I'm like, I gotta take 37 showers after seeing this shit. It's just gross. And in fact, at one point, he's like, "Oh, I'm in love, and you're so young." I'm like, "Oh my god,
that song was bad."
Yeah. So she's warning them, "Don't come to Grand Guignol because bad stuff," and they don't pay attention, and they come anyway. And
of course, he wants to go because she's there.
Oh, you know. Gross.
Listen, I thought about you all day. I wrote a song about you. The least you can do is tell me your name.
So, anyway, they're in the side of the road. They meet the interpretive dance murderess, and she invites them back to their place. And that's how they end up going back, instead of going to the hotel, because God forbid.
My favorite part of the whole thing is how the one driver is like, "No, I don't think that's a good idea." And then they're like, "Yeah, man, there's... You know, she's hot.
Come on."
And then he's like, "Okay."
Yeah, like
literally did not take much.
I'm convinced.
Yeah.
Your argument has merit.
Didn't take much convincing, except for, you know, she's hot.
So after being successfully lured back to the mansion, which I guess is passing for a hotel, they show up there, and
everything passes for something in
right,
this movie.
Right, right, right. Yeah. So that's, you know, they first show up, and their first, you know, hint that this is not quite a normal place is they hear the howling of grandma werewolf Nazi switchblade person up in the rafters, and then they're like, "Oh, okay." And the interpretive dance lady's like, "Oh, that's my grandmother's primal scream
therapy. Mother.
Mother.
Yeah.
Primal scream therapy," which, you know, California, go figure.
Well, okay, so I have a question that I was just thinking about earlier. So Hitler, you know, says your grandchildren to the grandma.
Oh,
right?
God, that's right.
And then the daughter had said mother. So does that mean that those little midgets are the interpreter dance chick's kids?
I don't really know where they crawled out of. I don't know.
Well, they could have been. There was the guy with the camera.
Was Christian.
And then there was the other one with the weed whacker.
Yes, and
it could have been either one of their kids,
I suppose.
Well, I mean, yeah,
they're not birthing them though.
They never. that's true. Like, who's the mother?
Unless
then?
They laid an egg.
Who's the unfortunate soul?
Who's the unfortunate mother who put out those midgets?
But clearly, Grandma Nazi Werewolf is their grandma, because that's the other thing that happens early on, is that you get to see old, really old, wrinkly, white, pasty flesh Hitler stooping Grandma Werewolf, and the two midgets come in because they're watching, and they're like, "Oh, we want to watch." And Hitler's like, "Oh, this is shame, go away." And Grandma's like, "No, oh, what's so shameful? Let them watch." And he's like, "Okay with that."
No. He says, "You let your kids watch, and now you're letting your grandkids watch."
Right.
I'm like, what in the world is going on here?
And this was after a bunch of fake German was just spoken randomly.
Right, right. Next thing you know, the band is, I guess, decides they're going to play a song for their fucking weird-ass hosts. I don't know why, but they do. Oh, I know why. It's to make, you know, the whole scene with the electricity thing.
Oh, but before then, he had asked that girl what her name was, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he had to figure out her name.
Because she keeps popping in.
I need it for the song.
Because he even forgot one other thing too. They got arrested, and
then they had to bail
him out.
And that's right. The jail cell was a
There's
barn.
There's just so much going on.
It was a barn.
Yeah. It was a shed. It wasn't even a barn.
This is why we decided to not do that. And then of course we did.
I'm pretty sure where they got locked up is where the weed whacker was kept.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yes, exactly. That's they found the weed whacker while they were locking everybody up, and they're like, oh, we could put this in the movie.
We'll make you a star.
I think they were just arrested for rock and roll.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. They were arrested because they were rock and roll people, and then they try to cancel the show because you know, and everything. And
Cassie bails them out with $37.22.
I thought it was the other chick who bailed them out.
Well, yeah, she tried to
bail them out with $37.
Oh, okay. So the other chick was the one who bailed them out,
right?
Yeah.
And then so the interpretive dance chick bailed them out, I guess, right? So then, because I couldn't figure that out, because it's all just so confusing.
The whole thing makes no fucking sense at all.
They never showed the interpretive dance girl doing it.
Yeah,
they just said it happened.
Yeah, it's like...
We'll take your word for it.
Yeah, but anyway, so they do that, and then he starts trying to talk to Cassie at the, outside or whatever, and her dad comes and says, yo, get away from my daughter, you know, right, and stuff like that. And then later, she's in a truck or something.
Right, an abandoned truck is just sitting there.
He's just sitting there, and so he gets in the truck next to her and starts talking to her, like, so what's your name, little girl?
He keeps calling her little girl. It's so creepy and fucking wrong.
He's like, what's your name, little girl? And she's like, you know, she doesn't say anything. He's like, do you have a name? And she, like, nods, and he's like, well, can you tell me your name? And she's like, no.
The stranger danger lights are going off in the background.
I know, and yet she still eventually, he was like, well, I wrote a
song
about you.
Dude, she's practically a zygote. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous.
He's like, I wrote a song about you. I just need to know your name so, you know, I can work it in there. And so she says it's Cassie.
Creeper victim.
And so when they go to play the song, he... plays this
Cassie.
Song called Cassie, probably.
Hairspray ballad. It's so bad. It's so cheesy.
Oh, God, it's awful.
Yeah. It's so boring, too. It's, God. I found myself... The family hated the song because they were performing it for the family. And this is the only time I'll ever say this. Adolf Hitler was right to pull the plug on music.
And they all got electrocuted. It was so funny.
It was funny because when we were watching it, James goes, wow, I agree with Hitler.
And that's the only time I ever say that.
I never thought I'd ever hear anybody say I agree with Hitler.
It was such bad music.
And we hated everybody. Every character in this movie, other than maybe Cassie, is just swimming in their own snot and slime and grime and vomit and puke. And they're just slimy, and just you hate every single one.
Piss and pus, piss and pus.
It's piss and pus, piss and pus.
That pretty much sums up this movie, which is what Hitler kept saying for some reason.
Yes, his little song, piss and pus.
Piss and pus, piss and pus, piss and pus, piss and pus.
Piss and pus, piss and pus.
So, anyway, the electrocution is like, the sort of foreshadowing because it's dangerous to be there. And, of course, what ends up happening is that the family ends up killing the rock and roll group. Thankfully, it's in a ridiculous way, of course. They each get their thing. You know, Sam Mann with his horrible, horrible long hair, you know, insinuates himself into interpretive dance girl's shower, where she has a very long knife hidden someplace.
Somewhere.
I'm not sure I want to know where.
I had a couple ideas, but...
I'm sure you did. Continuity Monkey had to close his eyes.
Speaking of which, I don't think there's much continuity.
Oh, the whole movie's a continuity error. The whole thing is ridiculous.
I'm just saying.
There
was some teleporting.
Oh, there was some day for night. And day and night.
And people just pop in and out at will. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, okay. This whole movie,
So Sam Mann gets killed. The two other guys get killed up in the attic by Nazi werewolf grandma. In fact, one of them is like,
Oh, yeah, his wife.
It's just really a weird accent.
And he's crying like a little baby. Yeah. Like, he was like, this is not what I expect a hair metal band
to do. No, it's like a high nasally whiny
I thought
voice.
It was a girl.
Yeah, it really said, no!
Not just that, like, his hair was all blonde. He looked like a girl.
He was wearing, like, really skinny jeans, too.
I know.
This doesn't
really
help.
Feminine, like, frame. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having an effeminate frame. It just made it unclear as to what was happening.
He was twee. He was very twee.
I thought it was a different character every single time I saw him, because I always thought it was a woman at
it
first.
It could very well
be.
Yeah.
I did too.
You know, Interpretive Dance Lady could have actually been his body double, I think, in a few times. And
I bet that happened.
Made that happen
I bet that actually
times.
Did happen.
They did look very similar.
So those three are now dead. And then E.J. Kearse, Jesse, ends up, he tries to save Cassie. They run off. They split up because a bald Nazi with the weed whacker is trying to kill them. He gives her the tape of the resurrection music and says, if something happens to me, play this. And she's like, okay, and runs off.
Foreshadowing.
And so then, bald Nazi guy ends up weed whacking Jesse, although really it's just like some mild abrasion on his chest. That's just really kind of lame.
Clothes a little.
Yeah.
So they're dead. Thanks.
So they're dead.
And so then the funny, it's because then the next scene is like, it's after the funeral and they're still at this crappy place and the manager's there and they're trying to, I guess they're comforting the manager and he's like, you don't have a job anymore. You might as well come work for me. And that's when Hitler reveals himself to be Hitler and we go into this whole weird fake German spiel and he gets up there and starts, this is Toten and America is Toten and everything is Toten and blah, 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 blah. It's stupid.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines was something where it was like, you don't get to say nine or something like that. Like, it's something with nine. Do you remember that? I have no idea. That was just random, but it was just a thought in my head. There was a lot of random shit in this movie.
It was.
Oh, yeah, and there was the scene with the city council.
So back in Grand Guignol at this time, they're having this ridiculous, pointless, and worthless set of scenes where the town council is voting out rock and roll, all of it.
It's just Footloose.
But right. it's okay, so it's Footloose, but it's also trying so hard to prove, to like, have something to say about rock and roll music,
and
right?
These people
By making everybody in the audience that comes up to the council, part of the council or whatever, the town, come up and be morons about it. Like, oh, I hear that, that rock and roll music makes you have sex. I hear you get
musicians eat drugs.
Eat drugs was the line. They don't take drugs. They eat drugs.
They eat drugs.
It was just ridiculous.
It's fucking stupid as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And they ban all rock and roll music. So the fucking sheriff who never closes his shirt. Orders them to gather up all of their. Oh my God, albums and tapes, and they get all together and they have this orgy of breaking everything and pulling tapes out. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot there were tapes back then.
Right.
It's so ridiculous. And in the meantime, I guess Cassie plays the tape and resurrects the goddamn band, and you get to have to see them. And they're only buried in, like, somebody opened up a bag of soil and just kind of poured it on top of them.
Yeah.
There was like an inch of dirt on top of them, and that's it. So then they fucking rise up, and you have to deal with them again, and they're now all painted.
They're walking
and
cycle.
And they walk like idiots. They walk like complete morons. Yeah. I guess this is what happens when you die.
Oompa Loompas. Now I'm thinking about it. They walked exactly like Oompa Loompas.
Maybe that's what they were told to do.
They're supposed to be stiff. Or something. Yeah. I don't know. It makes no sense.
If you made a clip of them walking and then put the oompa loompa doopity doop,
you need to do this.
We need to make this happen.
That sounds like an awesome little thing.
Clip, yeah.
I love it.
And then Cassie can blow up like a giant purple berry.
Violet.
You're turning violet.
So. At this point, the idiot band members, despite our hopes, have gotten up from the dead. And what do? They immediately march off in their very puzzling and stiff way, get into the van, drive off because they have a concert to perform, damn it, and they're going to do it.
Well, first they killed all the villains.
All the villains.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They have their revenge.
This was like almost halfway into the film, and every villain is dead.
Right. They come back to the scene of their deaths, and they actually manage to kill all of them, even the midgets.
Which made absolutely no sense of, like, nobody puts that, like, if they played that music again, like, it would make sense. Like, somebody actually hits the tape or something, and then they rose, those characters rose back up, but that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
No. So the villains rose up. Like, so, well,
it was the lingering effect.
Yeah, it doesn't stick to its own zombie continuity.
I know.
No. Continuity error.
God dang.
And
man.
We also forgot to mention, you know, before they actually all get killed is when dumbass Jesse is playing his two little notes and the spider keeps resurrecting over and over and over.
Yeah, well, we kind of mentioned that earlier, so I mean,
it's just, you know, it's like five times it happens. It's like, okay, we get it.
He doesn't apparently get it.
Well, he's not the brightest, you know, light on the Christmas tree.
But he knows it's like a resurrection one.
I know.
Like, he knows it's like that's supposed to happen. So I don't get it. Like,
it's funny because he's like, I found this in a book, and the guy's like, oh, what? You know, book.
Yeah, like he's trying to explain it to what a book is or whatever, and I'm like, so he read a book?
Yeah, I know. Really. You know,
like, he knows how to read. That's weird.
Where to pick up 14-year-olds?
That's that was his. That was his book.
Oh, no.
Tiger Beat, you know. So he's looking for his next conquest.
I know. Like, what is a 14-year-old girl like these days?
God. Oh boy!
I'm telling you, man.
Hair metal bands.
Creepy. It is.
That's
so
probably
wrong.
Why Tiger Beat doesn't exist anymore.
And it's funny because
made for pedophiles.
Early on, you made a remark. You're like, this movie. I don't think this movie is very appropriate. They couldn't make this movie now. Mm-hmm. They couldn't show this movie now. And I'm like, just you wait. And that's when the whole pedophile thing started to come in.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't think we even got into that
part. There was
a
lot of, like, subtext for a lot of fucked up things in this movie.
Oh, and there's so much more. I mean, we haven't even tipped the barrel yet.
37 showers. I had to take 37 showers after I saw this.
I think even more. I'm surprised.
The first time I saw it.
I'm surprised you only had 37.
I'm telling you, man. It's just slimy and snotty and grimy.
Just to give you guys a heads up about this is that Paul was telling us when we were watching it, we were getting to about, I think it was an hour and like 14 minutes or something. And we were like, isn't this almost over? Like, this is, and he was like, oh no, there's still more stuff. And I was like, no, there's no way that you can put, like, because it's got to be like an hour and a half movie. And I think it was. But like, he literally in 15 minutes, like, the ending of the movie is just in batshit crazy. And we're going to get to that. But like, it's
cram in as much crap as they can, if it makes sense or not.
There's like a point, it's after the band members resurrect and kill all the villains. The storyline splits into like four or five different ones. Different plot lines going on.
And they all intersect with each other.
The resurrected villains now start killing all the townspeople, and all the townspeople start coming back to life, and now they are, quote-unquote, the ghouls by the weird, stereotypical, offensive old Jewish guy with the crappy beard who is there for no other reason than to explain what's going on and then die five or six times.
He appears and dies in the same scene.
Oh, for Christ's sake. It was just over and over and over. Mm. And so he's like the exposition device, and it's just so ridiculous. And so now there's a zombie plague to have to deal with, and so one of the bright sparks in the town decides that ghouls don't like heads.
Mm-hmm.
So if you show them pictures of heads, they'll leave you alone.
Apparently.
This is the brilliance that we're talking about here. So they get posters made.
Celebrity headshots.
So like
Elvis was one of them.
Right, Elvis and
Marilyn Monroe.
John Lennon was one.
John Lennon, Jimi Hendrix. And they decide to go out into the streets where all the other zombies are and show them the heads. And, of course, they all get killed because it's a stupid fucking idea.
Yeah. Like, it works for, like, maybe 2 seconds.
It works surprisingly well for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And, like, 2 seconds.
All of a sudden, like, the zombies, like, retreat from them. Like, they're afraid or whatever. And I had made a remark while we're watching it going, so wait, these zombies are afraid of the heads. Why don't they just use their own heads? You know, like,
I know.
Like, why don't they just walk away, you know, walk up, and anytime the zombies get closer, just push their head into them, and they're like, oh my god.
Why the fuck would ghouls or zombies be afraid of heads?
Don't ghouls or zombies want to eat brains? Brains, brains are part of the head. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe this was before Return of the Living Dead.
I think, well, this was 85, so I think Return of the Living Dead was
85 as well, 85. I believe.
Okay.
I believe. I could be wrong. Hold on. Let me find out.
I want to say 86, so I'm not sure.
Return of the Living...
Well...
1985.
There you go, so it was roughly the same period.
Same period, so Return of the Living Dead did the brain thing for the first time, like in Night of the Living Dead, which was not actually... was ghouls, you know, was not actually zombies, if you really think about
it.
And
they ate everything. They didn't care about the brains.
Yeah, they didn't care about the brains. But you look at Return of the Living Dead was actual zombies and stuff, and they cared about the brains. So these were zombie. Well, they call them ghouls, right. So they could eat anything. But then why would they still be afraid of heads?
I don't know. It makes no sense.
The slightest.
And let's you know, face facts. Some of the quote-unquote ghouls or zombies were just people with masks on. It was cheesy and crappy.
The rubber masks were pretty obvious.
And let's not forget, of course, that interpretive dead girl, dancing girl.
Oh, yeah, she started dancing more.
Yes, and there's a whole, one of many, many 80s montages that shoved, you know, kicking and screaming into the story, if you want to call it, of this film that you have to suffer through. And it's just one after another, and it's clearly being used as filler.
Yeah,
you know, because there's at one point, it's right around the time where the town is going overrun by their own dead, that they keep flashing back to the scenes where they're in the mansion and getting electrocuted, or where they're in the van, or where the spider comes back to life, and they're just recycling the same shots over and over and over. The crappy little, you know, scene where they first get the Grand Guignol and they're doing a montage of them being fun-loving guys, and they're on roller skates, and they're dancing in front of cut-off signs with the faces cut off, and they're being fun-loving boys before they get locked up. You know, they keep cutting back to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just weird. And, you know, more stupid shit happens. I think right around now is when... I guess before that, Hitler tried to get the band manager to work for him, and he shows them gas chamber built, which is really bad.
That was probably the most distasteful thing in the movie.
I know. Mm. There's so many distasteful things. And he's got two forms of gas. He's got the yellow gas that does this horrible thing, and he's got the blue gas that does this. Piss and pus and piss and pus and piss and pus.
This is blue gas that fills the lungs with pus and urine. Piss and pus.
Oh, man. That was just terrible.
And towards the end... stereotypical Jewish offensive stereotype decides that you have to, the only way to stop the ghouls is to get the Wergens to be ravaged or stooped by the living dead, tied to a tree at midnight under the full moon, and then they'll go to sleep for 100 years, which makes no fucking sense at all. And, of course, the only one they have is Cassie.
The 14-year-old.
So they grab her, they tie her to a tree, and Ron, the manager, says, this is wrong, because by now the concert that the dead band has done has finally gone away. It took forever. They played like 10 songs, and you had to hear every single one of them all the way to the end. So they finally go back and rebury themselves, and Ron's got to go find them again and tell them that Cassie's in trouble.
Get up, you lazy bum. Stop being
dead. He's like yelling at them and shit. And they finally get up and slowly shuffle off to save the day, and they finally do. But they, not before playing yet another song, which strangely lures all of the zombies in town and themselves into the gas chamber, where you get to see the whole gas chamber scene, which is, again, extremely distasteful and stupid. And everybody's thankfully fucking dead. At least you think they are.
And at least you think they are.
You wish they were, trust me. And then, you know, at the end, and Cassie's yet again crying at the gravesite of dead Jesse, you know, is under a little tiny bit of dirt. And then, you know, his hand pops out and he gives her the ring and she's going to love him forever, blah, blah, blah.
Which is baffling, because if the whole point of taking all of the zombies into the gas chamber to kill them and... the zombie is still alive in his own grave to give her the ring? No. What was the point of the gas chamber? deciding to be dead.
What's the point of poison gas for an undead creature anyway? Yeah. It doesn't breathe.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's so stupid. This is like the stupidest, one of the stupidest movies I think I've ever seen. That's one reason why I like it. Not a brain cell in sight is to be found in this film. It's retarded. It's not.
Hmm. And then there was the scenes where there was the cow scene. So
we haven't even mentioned the midgets.
So there was like two. There were two. One was eating himself, and they would randomly cut to him eating himself during the entirety of the movie, just right. Like randomly. It would be no rhyme or reason for it.
Now this is a midget who already looked like a dummy. He looked like a piece of plastic. He didn't look like a live like a
ventriloquist
person
doll.
At all. Like, not even close. So I don't know what the hell was going on with that.
Yeah, and then the other one went on a escapade where he killed the guy. He killed the boyfriend of a couple and ripped off his head. And then the girlfriend took the guy's head and ran off with it. And then became super possessive over the head.
Yes.
And that was another plot line.
For like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it, like, pops up into several scenes, and she's got the head, and then one of the other zombies tries to steal the head.
She's trying to call 911, and they're like, don't bring the head inside, please. And it's like, dripping. Yeah, I'll just set it down out here. I'll be back, honey. And then it goes inside, has coffee, calls 911. What?
Oh, my God.
It's so ridiculous. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's bizarre. So that's kind of the plot. There's a lot more going on that we haven't touched on. It's just too much. It's too much. It's way too much. I guess we could talk a little bit about the acting. Some of the acting is actually not so bad.
Well, let's talk about what's the main guy's name that I like?
Jesse?
Not Jesse. The other
Roy?
Main.
Roy? The manager?
No. Yeah, the manager guy?
I wouldn't
say
he's the main guy. He's just...
I think he's just a supporting character.
Yeah, he's a supporting character.
What? I don't know. I would say he's the main guy because he is the one that's trying to get everything, you know, trying to get the town, you know, understanding. He never gets turned into a zombie.
Well, I think he becomes just unclear in this movie.
Yeah, he becomes the main guy after Jesse dies.
Right.
And
Jesse was
back.
The main guy in the beginning. In the start of the story, you think Jesse's the main guy. I think that's where it may have lost it fell off the rails a little bit is because you're expecting this guy Jesse to lead the movie because I mean he's the lead.
Saying the movie lost its focus?
Much like this podcast always does.
Oh yeah.
But it's okay. This film kind of deserves a podcast where we kind of lose focus and go all over the place. That just fits.
But the manager was a pretty good actor.
Yeah, we felt that guy was not too bad. I couldn't tell you for the life of me who it was.
Yeah.
Was his name Roy, you said?
I think it was Roy.
Yeah.
It started with an R, I'm pretty sure.
Like I said, other than the people I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, I don't know any of these actors whatsoever. I don't know that they ever did anything else. I know a couple of them pop into the American Drive-In. Like, I know Phil Fondacaro was in the American Drive-In. And a couple of the other, you know, supporting cast members are in there, too. But, he was probably the best one. I can't say that Cassie was necessarily a bad actress. It's just that they didn't really give her much other than to act like a 12-year-old coquette the entire time.
She acted like Kristen Stewart in Twilight, pretty much.
She's kind of there.
She's there. She's got no emotion. Like, even with her scenes where she's, like, staring at Jesse, she's just got a dead stare. And Literally, I think it's because she's so young as an actress. I mean, she'd only done two things. As was said, she was an episode of Falcon Crest or whatever, where she just played a teenage girl, probably maybe one line or something, you know, that kind of thing. To being almost a lead of, you know, the female lead
right.
of this movie where, you know, that kind of thing. You know, like, it's just, it gets to be kind of, you know, that's the thing. You know, like, right. she's like the lead of this movie, so... I don't know. Maybe she learned more later, and then she decided she just didn't want to be an actress.
And the thing is that, I mean, they don't really do a lot with her. I mean, there's like huge amounts of the film where she's just kind of sitting in the chair, watching the band, staring at them like a frightened squirrel. Not really doing anything.
I think that might have been a still frame. I'm legitimately...
It could very well be.
Kind of convinced it was.
There is a few times when she actually has to run away and act scared, and she was fine with that. So I can't fault her for what she's done, you know, compared to what she was given to do with. Okay, some of the other guys, on the other hand, like Sandman was his usual, you know, non-acting self. You know, E.J. Kearse, who plays Jesse, was so slimy. I don't know that he was supposed to be that slimy and disgusting and vile, but he was, and he's just revolting. He's just so gross.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he passed as a 80s hair band singer. I guess that's authentic enough. But, you know, as an actor, I mean, if you want me to care about his character, no.
No.
I couldn't wait for him to die. And then when he did, he kept coming back.
Just like the mosquito and spider. They just kept coming back.
Jesus Christ.
I think that was like the theme of this movie or something. You know, like the things that annoy you just keep coming back.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody else was fairly amateurish. I don't know that there were a whole lot of professionals in here. The interpretive dance girl seemed to be a decent dancer.
Yeah, like she was a very. I think she probably was a dancer.
And I
before.
Think, yeah, I think Jonathan mentioned this in the film. Is like she was probably an '80s, you know, rock video dance chick.
And then she was, she was probably a dance chick that the director probably did do music videos before this because it does feel like one big fucking music video.
Absolutely.
The songs, like, play the whole song.
Music video nightmares, and, it should have been called.
But I feel like that should have been a title in the 80s sure.
Clearly doesn't mind taking her top off on several occasions and dancing around an interpretive dance.
Oh, we didn't mention, I don't think, that in the beginning when she killed and drowned the guys or whatever, that there's just random blood that appeared.
Yeah, I'm still confused because she was drowning them.
Right.
She wasn't stabbing them.
Maybe they were piranhas.
Well, maybe she was. We don't really see that.
Well, her hands are above the water.
Maybe one hand was. I didn't see two.
I think there were piranhas in the water.
Okay.
Undead piranha midgets.
Well, then how is she okay?
Undead piranha midget Nazis.
Oh, because they stayed away from the interpretive dance chick.
Oh, you're right.
I don't know. Does the movie make any sense? No.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
But then others, like, you know, like the sheriff was terrible.
And he needed to button his shirt.
Oh, my God.
That bothered me so bad.
He had, like, one button at the bottom of his
I know, and the rest, button. it was like he was showing off his tank top. But, like, it made absolutely no sense for a sheriff.
Now,
I guess when it comes to this town, that the whole idea is all these people are morons in this town. And, like, music is, like, was it hair metal music is the best thing in the world. And there are people like this in the world that are too dumb to understand this stuff or whatever. That is, I feel like, the message of this movie.
And what a horrible fucking message that is to put me and the audience into the camp of being for the horrible hair band. Fuck them. I hated them. I couldn't wait for them to die.
Yeah.
Well, you can't. You told us before, like, while we were watching the movie, that you fucking hate hair metal music,
right?
Oh,
I do.
And so when you grew up in the 80s, which I was born in the 80s, so I kind of grew up a little bit in the 80s, you know, but I don't remember anything from the 80s because I really, other than seeing pictures of me holding a Dumbo, you know, stuffed animal, like, I don't really remember, much about the 80s, you know. I remember looking at my pictures going, ooh, those clothes were ugly. You know, I was not into, you know, I was a 90s guy, you know, so I grew up with 90s trends, 90s stuff. You grew up in the 80s, where 80s were a hair metal band, leather, you know, kind of things, like, or whatever, a jean
hairy
jacket.
Hairy chest and spandex music.
Yeah, jean jackets, things like that.
Fucking Van Halen and just all that White Snake and all that garbage. You know, I mean, if you love it, I mean, sure. I mean, I get it. I love crappy, horrible, terrible movies. Some people like crappy, horrible, terrible music. I personally, that just gets under my skin.
And that, hey, the crappy, horrible movies may get under other people's skin. There you go. Know? So there you go.
I didn't actually mind some of the music in this as much.
Other than the fact that we had to listen to the entire song most of the time.
Yeah, the entire song was really annoying, and the Carrie song was awful.
Oh my God, over and over and over.
Yeah. Cassie.
Cassie. Cassie song.
Oh, Cassie! Yes, it was a Hairspray ballad.
If you hold my hand, does that mean we're in love? I think is the main like line right after he says Cassie.
It's like, yeah. No, it means you're a fucking pedophile.
Yeah.
That means get away from the 12-year-old.
Jesus
Christ.
Good
God. Yeah.
That was bad.
all right. So let's talk about the editing.
Oh, God.
The editing was awful. Or crazy editing.
This is kind of like the very, very 80s music video-ish kind of jump cuts all over the place. But the problem is that it fractures reality beyond what the shitty story does. So people are popping in and out. Characters are going places that they should not. You know, they're just
random
ridiculous.
Characters show up and then disappear.
Absolutely.
It makes absolutely no sense.
It's ridiculous.
And talking about the audio editing, just like there's lines that you can't even hear because the music in the background is too loud.
Oh, yeah. The production level is low. I mean, there are so many times when we're looking at pretty much a black screen. And we're like, what the fuck is that?
It's like green black because they didn't have enough lighting on set or something because you just can't see anything.
It's like day for night, except it's so black that you can't really tell what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and this guy was terrible.
Yeah, the Jewish the old man Jewish stereotype.
Oh my God, that was like a minute of pain, absolute pain.
He couldn't understand
that.
A word he was saying.
Oh, and then he died.
Exposition dump.
Yeah. He kept saying, "I'm dying now." Like he was fine, like 3 minutes before he seemed totally fine. Then all of a sudden he's like, "Oh, by the way, I'm dying." Like what? Like absolutely makes no sense.
And the entire town cared about him for some reason.
They're like, "Don't die, don't die." Like, dude,
who are you?
I called him Gandalf because he looked literally like a
Jewish Gandalf.
Jewish Gandalf. He was a very he's a very big wizard looking guy who was trying to kind of tell warn everybody about the town.
Fiddler on Mount Doom.
How does he know about the zombies and about Adolf Hitler?
Because that's his role, is to be exposition man.
But, like, those are totally two separate, like, they're not connected.
Nope.
They're just two things that happened in this town at the same time. It's...
Yeah, he knows about Hitler, and it's like, well, what if you knew about Hitler? What the fuck? Why didn't somebody do something about
it? Yeah, why didn't you say something about it?
Why didn't you say something about Adolf Hitler?
Like, if you're going to tell the people in the town, like, I mean, apparently they believe anything. They believe that rock and roll makes you have sex.
Yeah.
If they believe that, then they probably would believe that Hitler is living in that town. Get rid of him. You know, it's just so strange.
The crooked sheriff makes a point. I guess they get the money or something because he said something along the lines of, "We know which side our bread is buttered."
I think that's the line. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that's the only reason they put up with him is because I guess they give him money.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I can't imagine why they would have these people around.
I think they're trying to do something that was above their pay grade by insinuating that cops are fascists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're pulling from too many different things.
Yeah.
You know.
They had an American Psycho reference.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Footloose.
You think it's just Psycho or
just like what the show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's just Psycho.
There's just too much stuff going on, and that's the problem with the kitchen sink, you know, approach to movies, is that you can't just throw a bunch of shit in there and hope that something makes sense.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just ridiculous. Like this, we don't need to see that. What the fuck?
Oh yeah, with the weird fondling of the seemingly
undead werewolf grandma.
He's about to
takes off his pants.
And then the dead werewolf grandma kills him. comes back from the dead and kills him.
But did we need to see that? That was just sleazy.
That was just gross.
Right, but then, like, and everybody coming back to life made absolutely no sense because none of the music plays or anything. So what does it? I know, but like that would make sense. You know, this makes no sense. Why did they come back?
I'm getting the feeling that making sense was secondary to the filmmaker's point. I think they just wanted to show fun stuff, I guess.
I feel like even though it says it's written by two people, it doesn't feel like it was written by anyone.
I think it was written by several people. I think if you go on the Internet Movie Database, you'll see there's like...
No, there's only two.
I'm surprised. I would think there's more than that.
Yeah, they probably had multiple scripts for different movies. And then... shoved it into one.
And that's
document.
What it feels like. It feels like a whole bunch of different movies in one.
Right.
Like a hodgepodge of different things
in
that
a
they
blender.
Couldn't put into, like, they couldn't, they were like, oh, I have a screen idea for a movie. And another person says, I have a great idea for another movie. And another person says, I have a great idea. And they said, let's combine them.
When did Footloose come out?
Mid 80s. So roughly around the same period.
Was it really popular?
I'm going to, probably 84 is what I'm thinking.
Okay. Was it really popular?
Fairly popular.
Okay.
It was 84, yeah.
Yeah, there
and
you go.
There was a bunch of zombie movies coming out at the same time.
Well, the big one that this would have been close to would have been Rock and Roll Nightmare. That's the John Michael Thor one. I think that came out in 86. But there were a couple other...
Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah. There were a couple other rock and roll horror mashups that were there or in the mid-80s because that was kind of the big, you know, PMRC thing. Rock and roll is the devil. Blah, blah, blah. All this other shit that came out with the 80s, the mid-80s. And so clearly this movie is trying to capitalize on all that kind of garbage,
too. Yeah,
trying
to be what everybody else is being.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, and if you think about it, a lot of horror movies from at the times or whatever kind of ripped from the headlines of what was popular or whatever. The horror movies don't do that anymore because, well, I mean, it's just there is a lot of nasty stuff. And not a lot of them do it. They try to do their own thing and kind of go on their own way and everything. I kind of like that better. But then sometimes you get a movie like Get Out, which is obviously about a situation that's happening these days and kind of things like that.
Right. I think so. I remember seeing one that was called Bath Salt Zombies. But it's, you know.
Oh, God, that was horrible. Like, but, from I've heard.
But you know what I mean? There's a movie that captures what happened. Mm-hmm. We had that for like a couple summers in 2010, 2011.
Somewhere in there.
And that's it. I mean, people aren't going to really know beyond that because I don't think bath salts are a thing anymore. At least I hope not.
Well, eating bath salts isn't. I think bath salts themselves are actually a thing still. But, like, taking bath salts and eating them or whatever.
Oh, God.
But, you know, I'm surprised nobody's made Tide Pod zombies.
I know.
You know
there's
right?
a movie we should totally do that.
That's totally got to be a YouTube thing.
Millennials would eat that up with a spoon.
Every YouTube.
Literally.
It's probably like six YouTube Red series that are all about Tide Pods because they were popular for a week.
I know.
That was the thing. Like, you know, the biggest thing recently was Bird Box on Netflix. And then people are doing, like, the Bird Box Challenge, where you had to do specific specific things, blindfolded, like drive blindfolded. Oh, yeah, that's a smart idea.
That's a great idea. Oh.
Fucking millennials.
But
God damn it.
There's always a trend. I mean, remember there's the, you know, what is it, the movie where you're not supposed to say anything, you're not supposed to hear anything, you're not supposed to see anything.
Yeah, that's A Quiet Place.
Quiet Place.
Well, yeah, and that was kind of what I think Bird Box was kind of a little bit like, you know, or whatever, but we're kind of at least, you know, but anyway.
Different sense.
That was like, at that time, there's certain things that people are doing in the political or social, like, world. Nowadays in social media and everything, we have way too much.
Right.
So we can't do a movie like this because... we'd have to do like multiple different movies, you know, or whatever, focusing on different, like lots of different things.
Right,
I mean?
Right. No, this movie was clearly made to capture the cash of the MTV mid 80s hairspray and spandex watching video crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
The kids will love this because they like X, Y, and Z. So let's just throw a bunch of shit out there and make some money.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else that we want to like conclude about it? Before we do our rating?
I'm not 100% sure. It's hard because there's so much. This movie really packs a lot of crap into its running time, but I think we've pretty much covered as best as we're going to cover it.
Yeah, just like Some parts of this film are terrible, and some parts of this film are so bad that they're good, and some parts of this film are just distasteful. There's nothing else but distasteful about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mixed bag.
Absolutely.
It's definitely a mixed bag of shit. Mixed bag of shit. There you go.
Piss and pus. Piss and pus.
Oh my god. So, all right, I guess let's go on to the rating. What are our thoughts on... So, you explain the rating system.
Okay, so... We have a stinkometer, which kind of measures how stinky we feel a movie is. It's a 1 to 10, with 1 being the least amount of stink, where we think it's actually a pretty good film. And then
yeah,
5...
Yeah, like 1 would be excellent.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know the excellent if it's going to make it this year, but it's good.
Yeah.
But, you know, 5 is kind of right in between some crap and some decent stuff, and a 10 is just Neil Breen territory crap.
Okay.
And so we each kind of give our personal ratings for it. So I'm going to go to Moody first to give his score, because usually I'm the one that leads it off. I want to hear what you have to say.
9.5.
Wow.
This is so close to being a 10, in my opinion. Wow. The only reason it is not a 10 is maybe because the guy I call the main guy, not Jesse, but the other guy, he kind of saves the movie because he actually brings some sort of some sort of realism to it. You know, like, this guy is the normal guy. The only problem I have with him is that he doesn't run away when he could.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, you know, when Hitler takes off his mask to reveal young Hitler, he just stands there and, like, you know, lets him, you know, like, I'm just like, dude, leave.
Right.
Like, but aside from that, he is a normal guy. And I liked him, and I liked a couple things in it that was enough to save it.
I have to say I find this fascinating because Actium Maximus, you fought against the idea of that being a 10. You're like, oh, that wasn't that bad. And so you think that this was worse than Actium Maximus?
What did I give Actium Maximus?
You gave it a 9.5, but when I tried to give it a 10, you wigged out.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
Well, I think it was because it's so early in the freaking season already.
Should not matter, sir. It should stand on its own merit.
It should matter. You shouldn't be showing me 10s in the beginning.
I may be showing you 10s the whole season.
Oh, God. Oh. I still think this is a 9.5.
Okay,
and I will stand by my opinion on 9.5 for the other one, too, for Actium Maximus. Because, you know what? It wasn't both of them. They're not Neil Breen bad yet, you know. Like, it was crossing that line into it, but no.
Okay, for me, this is Neil Breen bad. This is a 10.
Oh.
The only reason I decided to give it a little bit of a break was because the puppets, even though they're ridiculous, are kind of cool. There is nothing cool about this movie. This is just bad.
God, he's going to show us 10 all fucking time.
Way.
That's great.
Nah, I won't do that to you, but I'm going to show a few. So this is a 10. So, James, what would you think based on a 1 to 10 scale?
Okay. If you had asked me that before the first montage, I would have said this is probably around a 6. It's
right.
Not the worst, but it's okay. I like some of the cinematography. I kind of like the music. And then the montage has happened, and it dropped down to a 7. And then Hitler happens, and it dropped down to an 8. And then...
He's blocking the dialectic... Descent
it
of
just
the film.
It just gets worse and worse, and like the editing gets worse
it
and
just
worse
keeps getting lower.
I'm gonna have to end on a 9.
Yes.
A 9? That's
nine.
It?
That's it.
You know, Hitler would be proud to be like 9, 9, 9.
9, 9, 9.
No. Because there, like I said, I kind of liked some of the music in there. Some of the scenes I thought were somewhat competent, and I could see there's some parts that I thought they were like genuinely funny. They were trying to be funny and they succeeded. So I think that there were some parts that were decent. But then there was just a schlock of shit.
It's like this little bitty wonderful donut that is covered in 25 pounds of crap.
Oh, God, yeah.
There's no donut in there for me.
No donut in there.
No, it's just awful.
So 9.5 for me. 10 for...
10.
So, wow, okay, so it went from 10, 9.5 to 9.
There you go.
There you go.
Wow, all that's right. Interesting.
Not bad.
All right. So, it means that, like, everybody takes it differently.
There you go.
You know, a little bit. I mean, you can get something different. You guys may think this is an 8. I don't know. Maybe you've seen worse movies. I mean, I've seen a lot of worse movies. The Room is... definitely worse than this movie.
Well, the thing about it is the Room doesn't have the skeeziness that this one has with the underage stuff.
The younger underage stuff, maybe not, but Tommy Wiseau was very skeezy. You know?
But at least, like, he's doing it with an age-appropriate person.
That's true.
But also, this movie has, like, an implied rape scene, which,
yes,
that's fucked up.
It is
fucked up. But the Room has Tommy Wiseau's ass. that just kills it.
He's like poking her pelvis or her belly button or something. We're not sure.
What the?
It's very weird.
You have to watch the Room the whole way.
You gotta watch the entire thing.
poor guy. Just close your eyes with the sex scene.
But the thing is, the Room made me laugh. This makes me cringe.
This part made me laugh a couple times. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, not intentionally, but it made me laugh.
I laughed at your guys' reaction, that's for sure.
I know. We had a few good reactions.
I don't think I'll ever forget when I first watched this film. I had already was at a point where I knew this was going to be a shitstorm masterpiece. But when you first meet the Nazi werewolf grandma with the switchblades howling in her little chair up in the attic, I'm like, what the fuck am I into?
How did you find this movie?
This was a movie that was out in every single video store back in the day in the 80s. It's this one and Rollerblade and Microwave Massacre. It just came out at the time when everybody put out a movie. It didn't matter how shitty it was because everybody was renting videos. So you made a movie, whatever price it cost, it didn't matter. You shoved it on a VHS tape, and you put it out in these little mom-pa stores. They bought them all, and everything was there to be rented, and you just watched it. And so that's what happened.
How successful was this movie?
Not very.
Mm.
Not very. Because after this, I mean, I don't know that the guy did much. The director didn't really do much. Nobody went on from this to do any better things.
Do you think maybe there might be a correlation there? Like,
yeah,
you know,
I'm thinking so.
Like, maybe this movie bombed. Like, I remember hearing that in Troll 2, that the girl who, and this was on that documentary, The Best Worst Movie, where the girl, you know, it was so bad that she was trying to get auditions, and people were like, weren't you in that Troll movie?
Oh, dear.
And she was, like, looking at them going, oh,
is this the popcorn
man.
Girl?
No, the main girl. The main girl. The teenage girl that, you know.
What a shame.
Yeah, so she was trying to get, and she's cute, she's adorable, and she was trying to get more, she was trying to audition for people, could not get a book apart because everybody knew her from that shitty movie.
Mm-hmm. And, get blacklisted.
Yeah, you're pretty much blacklisted if you do a horrible movie like this.
I'm thinking of the actress in Birdemic. You know, she ended up doing, you know, Birdemic 2, and she ended up doing another Yeti love story.
Yeah.
Those are the two movies that I saw. I'm like, oh, man.
Well, I mean, and here's the thing. Nowadays, it's fine. You do a bad movie, people are praising the bad movie. People are laughing at the movie. You know, not laughing with the movie, but laughing at the movie and whatnot. And then people like the Birdemic girl can get work.
And
I guarantee
glad.
You that girl will be able to get work now.
I'm glad.
But that's because we live in a different time where bad movies aren't just viewed as, like, bad. They're kind of loved and cherished and made podcasts about.
Plus, I mean, think about it. As bad as Birdemic was, it wasn't her fault. You know, she did the best she could under the circumstances. That is the director's fault almost entirely.
No, that's her fault because she read the script. She could have passed.
Well, when you know how it is, when you're a young actor and you get offered a part.
I need something.
A lead role,
lead role.
You have to take it, I guess.
Exactly. And you
and she
try
didn't
your best.
She didn't show her tits or anything, so.
No.
Good for her. You know, she didn't, you know, succumb to like degrading herself in order to do it. Never mind. She was in Birdemic. She degraded herself.
There you go. Hey, she could have been worse. She could have been in Hard Rock Zombies.
That's true. She could have been the little teenage girl.
Oh,
and
my God. I don't know whatever happened to Jennifer Coe. I would love, love, love to find out.
I hope she listens to this podcast.
I do.
We're not saying
anything. Please contact me. I would love to interview her. I would love to find out what she thought about her experience and what happened back then. I don't know what she's gone on to do, but she's just one of those people. And this happens. I get caught up in actors and actresses from some of these movies, and I would just love to know what was going on at the time. You know, because you'll never get this, you know, re-released with commentary or anything like that. It's gone. You know, this movie had its moment, its moment is captured in like Bug and Amber, and that's that. There's nothing else. It'll never come out in Blu-ray or 4K or anything like that. This is what we've got. And that's kind of why I like to do movies like this, because otherwise this is a relic from the 80s that no one will even know about.
Now, it could stream somewhere or something. Like, it could go on to streaming, which is pretty cool that a lot of B-movies are going to streaming instead of, like, DVD or Blu-ray or whatever.
I couldn't even tell you who owns the rights to this.
I know it was a Brentwood, right? Or was it Brentwood? Who was the company that...
No. I don't know who it was, honestly.
Well, anyway, whoever owns the rights, you know, we love you guys for putting this out, because even though...
Yeah.
When I say 9.5, he says 10, he says 9. We're not saying this movie is you shouldn't watch this movie.
It's still with love.
We're saying watch this movie. It's that bad. We love it. Like, we try not to show movies that we wouldn't endorse ourselves.
Absolutely.
In some way.
I would never show a movie that I despised or I wouldn't want people to see. I'm doing movies that I think people should see. And they absolutely should see this. It just may not be for the reasons that the original filmmakers made.
Like we said, it's not... A lot of this stuff was not intentional, you know, or whatever, that we laughed at it. But, you know, it was what it was.
And I did appreciate the midget and the cow scene.
Aw. Midget and the cow.
Poor cow. It wasn't a zombie cow, but I had my hopes. Maybe next one.
Yeah, I was surprised they didn't go that route.
I know.
You know, like...
Well, they threw in everything else they could think of.
I know, and the kitchen sink. So, I guess that about wraps it up. We just want to let you guys know things that are happening and this that's going on. If you're not checking out our YouTube channel, please do. Indie Film Cafe. We know James has been checking it out, so thank you, James, for watching our reviews and everything. And then, let's see, indiefilmcafes.reviews is our website. Paul runs that, so you can see the Stinkometer and other stuff that's on there. Sick Flick Productions is my website. Soon to be supernaturalassassins.com website is coming in April. And next podcast we have will be my movie. And we won't say what it is yet because we'll see. Because like last time, things didn't go like I planned, and then I had to have a backup plan. So I'll have a backup plan for the next time just in case. But the plan is to do it on that Saturday that we have everybody here for the film shoot that we're doing. We're doing a short film called Lucas and Olivia. It's a supernatural assassin short. And it's going to star me and my friend Sam, and Laura Jean is coming out. So Sam, Samantha Holderfield, Laura Jean, Kim Demetriotis, and bless you.
Bless me.
I think that might be it for the podcast for next time. No, that's who's going to be there. So after that, we'll see. We'll see what we have, and then after then is March, and it's back to Paul. You know,
oh, I got plans for March already. Don't you worry?
Yeah, he even told me some of the plan if it happens. So
yeah, it won't be quite a 10, but it'll be a lot of fun.
Okay, that's good.
So James, now that you've seen that we're up to on a Sunday, what do you think? You think you'll be back?
Yeah, I think I will. That was really fun, actually.
Yeah. We try to enjoy ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And do something that people, you know, and have fun with this. So.
There you go.
Well, thank you. Check our YouTube channels out. Check us out on Podbean. Check us out on,
Stitcher.
Spotify, Stitcher, Radio Public, Apple Podcasts, everything.
iTunes,
all that stuff. Just. Yeah. Check us out all over the place. If you're just getting, you know, into everything, please subscribe. You know, also we have a Patreon. We never talk about the Patreon anymore.
We do. If you want to, you know, throw us a couple bucks, we'd appreciate it. It helps us make our podcast. It helps towards our production values. Just helps in general. So if you feel generous, feel free to drop on by and lend us a buck or two.
And if you're an interpretive dance girl, keep interpretive dancing, everybody.
Absolutely.
So thank you guys for checking this out. Have a great night, everybody.
See you.
Bye.